Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We got the right where we want.
Primetime on Football Friday.
No one comes into our house and pushes us around.
1080 The Fan.
How you play today, from this moment on, is how you will be remembered.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make The Fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Football Friday with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, what a do?
Ahoy!
What a do?
What you got? You got it. What do you want? Echo?
What a do?
What a do? Do today. Do 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 do. I'm the luckiest man.
How's everybody today? How's your Friday?
Feeling good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was supposed to be kind of a crappy day.
Was it?
Yeah, it was not. Got out and played a little golf. Or yeah, is it you Jared did. Goff this
yeah,
morning?
Yeah, you did.
I'm not sure which one that I did.
God, that's great.
I'm suckling at the power teat of one Isaac Rop giving my golf game pointers.
Yeah, I've helped you a little bit, huh?
Scary that you have become my golf guru, but I do. I'm relying on golf Rop's incessant ability to sit and watch the Golf Channel for hours upon hours and hours. Instead of me doing that,
yeah,
I just bug you and like, hey, old man Rop, what is the Golf Channel telling
you? Well,
me
you know
do?
What? The pointers that I have given you
yeah.
over the last
say month?
Couple weeks
yeah.
have really helped you.
They have.
You realize I saved you a lot of money with that because
golf instruction.
I've had 43 years. Wait, how old am I? 45.
45.
It's taken me 45 years to learn some of the things that I've learned about the dumb game of golf.
See?
And I'm only just now figuring certain things out. And when I can just pass that along, you know, that's like a lot of lessons. That's a lot of, yeah. lot of experience. That's a lot of heartache. It's a lot of scar tissue. But I'm finally, you know.
I just turned
I'm finally
now.
Able to pass it along to you. You're lucky.
I just turned to, you're my Yoda.
Because that's years of greens fees and lessons and yes. frustration and yes. That I've given you.
Suckling at Rob's power teat has indeed made
a
difference.
Golf is great for a lot of reasons. You know, it kills a lot of birds, right? Like you're outside, you can get a
couple drinky poos, you can yeah, burn one, you know. Yeah.
You're right. Or you can be more competitive, like into tournaments yeah. and stuff.
I hung out with my old man today, so we got to have mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. sort of moment.
I mean, in what other walk of life can you get 3, 4, 5 hours just alone with someone to just hang and talk? And yeah, you're hitting the ball around, but.
And you don't want to, and that's the thing is, if you spend multiple hours with your parents, there's a good chance that's going south. But when you're on the golf course, it's all right with the world.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's just, it's great.
It is.
The other thing, one of the other things that I love about it is that it's like the never ending dangling carrot. Mm-hmm. Like you have recently had a breakthrough, mostly thanks to me.
Yes. Like 98%.
Now, and that's exciting for you. Yes. I'm excited for you because I know what that feels like.
Yes.
And it doesn't change no matter what level of golf you're at, whether you're trying to just break 100 or you're trying to break 70, whatever it is. It's all the same.
Yeah, it's all varying levels.
And it's a great feeling when you're like, you know what? I'm getting this. I'm figuring it out.
Yeah.
I love this. Yeah. And then you go on to the next dangling carrot and then the next dangling carrot. And then you're like, well, why can't I quite reach that carrot? And then you finally have that breakthrough and you're like, oh, I'll play better golf if I do. It just never ends. And it's really interesting.
The personal challenge, because who wants to challenge themselves at anything important in life? That would be no good.
Right.
Then we'd be like successful and wealthy and no one wants to do that.
That's a great point.
Let's challenge ourselves in a very meaningless temporal sort of way and just do this. Focus a lot of my energy towards that.
Well, look, it's a hobby.
Yes.
But it's an important hobby because golf also, one of the other of its many qualities is it gets you away from the things that you don't want to be around.
Yes. There is something nice about being able to put the phone down, being able to put politics down. And like I said, it's 4 hours of
so it's important
serenity with some cursing and some club throwing, which, no, you should not do that. I'm amazed that I'm amazed at the people who are poor at golf and then get mad about it.
Right.
I decided years and years ago that I am not nearly good enough to get mad. I will not get mad playing golf. It's pointless. It's like if you got on a skateboard and you had never skateboarded before and then you fell down, why would you be mad? Did you expect to be good? No. Hey, pick up this guitar. Wait, I can't play Stairway to Heaven? I'm livid. Well, you just picked up the guitar. But for whatever reason, when it comes to sports, I feel like we put a lot of expectations like you should be able to do that. Like, well, if you haven't played basketball in 10 years, you're not going to pick up the ball and be Damian Lillard. You're not Steph Curry draining threes out there. And yet that's the expectation.
Everything you say is correct, except that I will say that golf is exceptionally maddening. Like, I can see why, even if you're not great at it, it would make you mad because it is maddening. I mean, it is truly maddening. Like, it's not, you know, like when these guys are shooting 70 mm-hmm. out on tour, which to them is like, ho-hum. You know, what percentage of the time are they hitting it absolutely perfect? Very little.
Exactly.
Very little. And that's the thing, is like when people start out and they're not any good, but you think you should be hitting it right way more than you actually ever do, no matter how good you get, right? You're always missing one where, you know, it's just it's where you miss and how you miss. Yeah. And managing your misses.
Yeah, you hit like one right down the middle and you're like, why can't I do that
time? That's
like,
right. Well, no one does that every time. Even the pros rarely do that every time. Yeah. Go look at their numbers. Go look at their interviews, you know?
Yeah, you spray it around a little bit.
So you said it. The last word you said was the exact, this is everything about golf. Expectations.
Yes.
That's it.
We would be better in life.
Do not have expectations when you go out there.
We should manage if we all manage expectations in life, that's why I always say you got a case of the supposedes. We all walk around with it's supposed to be, it's supposed to be that. Well, it's not, right?
That's right.
And the sooner you learn to accept that, the better off we'll all be.
Golf is the imperfect game.
Yes.
And you should not expect anything close to perfection or even good.
No.
Just manage your bad. Manage your bad.
Get out there and work the ball around the course a little bit. It's a metaphor for life. I'm just happy that I didn't get rained on today. How about that?
Yeah, it's supposed to rain maybe Sunday.
Yeah. But it's nice. We got a couple extra days. It was supposed to be raining today. And then it said knee.
Wonderful.
It said no.
It did say knee.
It said knee.
We are the knights who say knee.
Knights who said knee rain.
Knee.
Bye.
What was I going to tell you?
I don't know. We were waxing poetic and we got very bro-y because I was suckling at your power teat and there was a breakthrough and now we're feeling good and we don't hate each other for once. And golf has brought us together once again. I give it time. We'll be back to hating each other soon enough. Hey, there's Beefsteak Mike.
There he is.
Hey!
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, when we talk golf.
Mike Lynch.
Mike just has to slowly back away.
I don't know about slowly back away. I just kind of glaze over and do other things.
Yes.
Like, I had to build the show today, and I made sure, you know, some stuff was in the right spot. So,
love Mike.
You know, that's done.
What's going on, Suk?
I was looking for you for like 30 minutes.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think you're supposed to ask that on the air.
Okay.
What?
Well, now it's awkward.
What's happening?
Oh, I was just going to do a spot with him, and I couldn't find him.
Oh.
We couldn't find you. And
oh.
We couldn't find someone else, and then we were like, well, let's not ask questions.
I just walked around the building twice, and I was like, I don't know where he is.
Oh, all right. I was dead. And now I'm
miraculously back to life.
And now I'm back from the dead.
So, Joey Harrington's coming on today.
Yes. It is Football Friday, and Joey will be here.
Yep. Well, he's not coming in.
No. I think he's down in Central Oregon.
It's possible.
It's good to be Joey Harrington. We've determined that over the years. That's what we've learned.
It's not bad.
No, it's very good to be Joseph J. Harrington, or is it J. Joseph Harrington?
J. Joseph Harrington. And the reality is, it's good to be any of us. I mean, we can't complain.
No.
Well, I mean, I was just talking to Sam, one of our sales managers back there.
Yeah.
And she was like, I was like, what are you doing here? You're not allowed in here. I'm calling the cops.
Ooh, COVID. The COVID police.
And she was like, no, you know, my house is all torn apart because we had some water. They just had a flooding, like a water main or a... She said a toilet exploded. So I didn't ask, but...
What's the toilet hit? You're like, I'm just going to slowly back away from this.
Water was like pouring through her can lights, like in downstairs, like in the kitchen and stuff. Yeah. Like they had to replace other floors. And she's like, everything's ripped up. And so I just needed to get out of there. And I'm like, I totally understand that because we just went through that with the tree limb hitting and tearing up our house. And, you know, he's got guys over all the time doing things and loud noises and it's just a lot.
Yeah.
And then we were like, you know what, though? We can't bitch.
No.
We can't bitch. No. And we agreed that, like, you know what? We're fine. There's worse things. We've got our health. We've got beautiful children.
You are being very, you're like, you've got a real zen sort of peaceful, easy feeling about you.
I'm in a good place now.
Are you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, wow.
Yeah. Life's good.
I feel like
you got to have some perspective.
We've turned over like some sort of new leaf. I feel like
I've always been good, but you know, we go through ups and downs. We all do. Yeah. And I tell you what, the wildfires.
Yeah.
When you put the wildfires, 2020 has sucked balls.
Yes.
100%. For everyone. Ask anyone and they will tell you their laundry list of why it sucks.
I think Jeff Bezos is doing okay.
But once you took all of 2020 and all the stupid stuff that drives us all crazy and then COVID and then you put the wildfire thing on top of that.
Yeah.
I tell you what, you almost broke me.
It almost happened.
It was a test. And I came through it.
Rob was just that that old donkey, right? And just he was carrying that big load and you got that hump in the back. It was getting ready to go down.
I was reading about two old guys in Italy today.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are elderly and they live up in like Perugia. Do you know where Perugia is?
I don't know where Perugia is.
It's like Eastern Italy. It's very remote.
Okay.
Over there. Umbria. And it's a beautiful part of Italy. And these two guys live in a town. They're the only two guys that live in the town. They live up on a bluff and nobody ever goes up there.
Mm-hmm.
But they interviewed him because they still wear masks because of COVID.
Okay.
They're the only two that ever are there and they still wear masks because, and their point is, hey, it's the principle. That's what we're supposed to do. So that's what we're going to do, which is an adult sort of way to look at things. But
I guess
that's neither here nor there.
So if I'm just like sitting in like in a basement by myself, I should still be wearing a mask?
Well, their philosophy is, hey, this is what they're telling us to do, therefore we will do it.
Okay.
And there's something quite adult about that, but okay. So anyway, what I was telling you that is they started to describe their lives, and they said it snows up there quite a bit. So mm-hmm. In the winters, basically they just start fires. They sit and drink wine that they make. They grow it up there, and they bottle it for the winter, and then they make pasta and sit and drink wine with their pets all winter. And that's what they do.
Hmm.
And I love that so much so that, again, during my breaking point, I was going to go do that. Like, I would be that guy with a long beard, gray beard, albeit, or white.
Yeah. Well, like a David Letterman sort of thing.
Yeah. Like, you know, I was done.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
And I want to be those guys. Now I'm like,
wow.
Let's see how 21 goes.
I think we've all learned something today that Rob, you know, Rob
I was
has
close
found
to checking out.
Some sort
he
of
was
inner...
perilously close.
I was close to checking out, man.
He's found some sort of inner peace. Well, now I'm happy
for about
you.
A day.
Well, we'll be back.
We'll see.
Give it
see
time.
What happens November
something
3rd.
Something else will piss you off here.
Well, there's only a couple of weeks till that. So
yeah. Well, we'll
enjoy
see.
Your zen for now.
Oh, Lord.
We'll see.
He put those bricks down. Someone tells me they're going to be saddled back up real quick.
But I tell you, you read about those two old Italian guys.
Yeah.
They're great. We could all learn a lesson from those two guys.
I'm intrigued by that.
On a lot of levels.
Yes.
I'll forward you the article.
Italy has the answer, right? Good food, good wine, naps.
Yeah.
Something to that.
The only thing I would need would be internet to mm-hmm. bet on sports up there.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. You're going to have to learn to bet on soccer and like cricket and whatnot.
No, you can bet on, I mean, you know, you can bet on U.S. sports.
That'd be hard to follow U.S. sports from the middle of nowhere.
Well, he would need the internet.
Yeah just give me the internet.
The time differential.
The time, I followed it when I was over there.
Fiber optic. He needs the really, really strong internet.
Baseball. It was hard,
yeah.
But you can do it. Yeah. Look, we got to have something to do up there. You know. The wine's good.
I understand, but
the conversation's good. The serenity is good.
Hey, the Masters is coming, right?
But
would you put like a putting green up there for yourself?
Hell yeah.
So we've learned. It's
probably just build my own course up there.
Oh, yeah. Why
if
not?
They let me.
While you're at it, right?
God, how great would that be?
They got a lot of land up there not taking up a...
Don't have to wait for anybody else. You can just go play
That's right. All right. Are we ready to go, guys?
I think we are.
You guys ready to party?
Should we sports?
Thank you. Thank you. Jolton Joseph Harrington. Is this football live?
I believe it is.
SMU's playing. Are they? They're ranked. Is SMU good?
I don't know, but it's a weird year, and everyone keeps losing, and then I guess that's not true because the Big Ten and the Pac-12 can be in the rankings now.
Is that Spike Dykes Sonny Dykes, out there? I think it is.
Is he still there?
Good little coach.
Baseball game is on too, by the way.
Good little coach.
Yeah, that is still Sonny Dykes.
Sonny Dykes.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well at Cal, but...
Do you remember Spike Dykes? Well, he was a bad fit for Cal.
He was. Well, he comes from the South where football matters. And
that's
then
right.
He ended
He's
up
from
in,
Texas.
He ended up in Berkeley where, let's be honest.
He's like, hey, man.
Football kind of, sort of is important, maybe relevant.
You all eat your hippie kale. I'm going back down to Texas where they believe in football.
Yes.
And now he's got Cal ranked. SMU ranked.
He did not like those academic standards. He did not like the facilities that were hard to upgrade.
All just gets in the way.
It does get in the way. Funny how that works.
Okay, well, Joe Harrington will be a bye for some very good football combo at 5:30. We will set your weekend DVR. We have the curious case of Clayton Kershaw. Browns could only have one quarterback on Sunday.
Well, how many do you need?
Well, hopefully just one.
Yeah, right? Just need one.
But in the event, you know.
Yeah. Well, now you're just being...
Then who plays?
Now you're back to being a worry Nelly. Come on. You only need one. Only one can play at a time. Unless you're New Orleans for whatever reason, then you play two seemingly for literally no reason whatsoever because it never works.
And the best one of all of them doesn't play.
I know.
The third one's the better than any of them.
Hey,
God, they're weird.
You sit your ass down.
So we start with Nick Saban watch. Oh, he's coaching, fella. He's coaching. Next on The Fan.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, here is our poll question today. It's on our website, 1080thefan.com. As always, it's brought to you by AAA Heating and Cooling, family business, helping families for over 50 years, AAAIAQ.com. I am in love with Nick Saban watch. And today's question is, will Nick Saban coach against Georgia tomorrow, yes or no?
I still...
The answer is trending towards a big ol' yes.
You damn right it is.
Tested
negative today, baby.
They got to find a way to do that. I mean, I just...
Why would you be shocked by that? I mean, honestly, you're an idiot. You know the SEC.
I know.
You know Nick Saban. This is the biggest game of the year.
Yes, it is. Two undefeated teams.
If this is
two
Kansas,
three.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it's Georgia weekend, damn it.
He was evaluated by the team physician and remains asymptomatic.
That's
without
right.
Without a fever.
Well, as Mike said, he tested negative.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Did he really?
Well, probably not.
They said that he needs to test negative three times.
Yep.
And then it's going to be considered a false positive.
Yep.
Which, remember what Rob said the first day?
Yep.
False positive.
Guess what? Guess when that third test is.
The PCR test was repeated Thursday, and it was by the SEC-appointed lab. I bet that lab's in Birmingham, by the way.
That means Friday is test number two.
Yep.
That means Saturday is test number three.
Saturday morning pregame. Here's your test. Oh, negative, coach.
Look at that. It was a false positive.
Get on
Go
out there.
Go beat the dogs.
Oh, good times.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
So which is more likely? Because Trump was doing the, I don't know when I was tested last before the debate, or Saban's false positive. Which one more truthful?
Can they be equally truthful? And by that, I mean not at all?
Equally full of S. I love it.
Yeah, so Saban said, I'm doing great.
Yeah.
I don't have any symptoms. I don't have a fever. And then it says Saban said he would like to be a part of the game against Georgia, but that NCAA rules prohibit in-game communication with anyone on the staff while he is in quarantine, and he cannot travel to the stadium while in quarantine.
Yeah.
But if Saban has three negative tests, including the second two in a 24-hour span, he could conceivably be cleared to return to athletic activities before Saturday's game in Tuscaloosa. He said, quote, I would hate to not be at that game Saturday if that's what this turns out to be.
Oh, he's going to be. You're 100% right.
See, we got you now.
He is there. I do enjoy, too, that the test that was positive came from the non-SEC lab, but all the SEC lab tests have come back negative.
This is why you have your own labs.
Exactly.
Still, Saban said he wishes there was a way for a coach in quarantine to be able to participate, adding that it doesn't seem quite right that he wouldn't be able to communicate with his staff or players during a game from a remote location like his home.
No.
He said, there's ways to do this so you wouldn't be putting anyone in harm's way, but I also believe in the safety of all the people. So there would have to be some logistical things to work out, he said.
Look, the only logistical thing we have to work out is what time Saban's getting to the stadium.
You were right. That's right.
I look.
He said,
I have doubted you before, and when you doubled down on this, and I was like, there's just no way. And yet here we are a day away from Bama, Georgia. And if I am I don't know what the Vegas odds are, if you can bet on it right now, but I'm pushing all my money towards Saban on the sidelines.
Test positive on a Wednesday, yeah. Coach on a Saturday. That's how it works in
Welcome
SEC
to
territory.
The SEC. My still favorite SEC thing of all time was your Les Miles, national championship coach Les Miles.
Yeah, he's not going to coach this weekend.
No,
he tested positive last week, and he's still not coaching this weekend.
It's Kansas, and they're not playing Georgia.
Right.
You're like, yeah, whatever.
It's not as urgent.
No. 100%, man. If this was Tallahassee JUCO, Saban's not on the sidelines. But I'm pretty sure it was LSU that did this under Les Miles, where they had a bunch of guys suspended, and they let them play the week after being suspended, and it was against like Texas A&M. It was like a top 25 game, and the week after was, and this was like at the start of the season, and the week after was nobody, and they suspended them for that game.
Yeah.
And when pressed about it, his response was, well, why should I punish everyone else on the team? He was like, hey, those guys are really good. And if we play, that punishes everyone else for their transgressions. That doesn't seem fair. So why don't we go ahead and let them play against the top 25 team, and then we'll suspend them against the nobody. Ohio State did that as well. Ohio State was playing in the Sugar Bowl, and I think they were playing Arkansas. And they let Terrell Pryor and like four more guys, they let them play in the Sugar Bowl and then suspended them for week one of the next year. And week one was like Eastern Michigan. They let them play in the Sugar Bowl. And their reason for that is, well, a lot of people paid, you know, good money to go to the Sugar Bowl. And there's a lot riding on that. And our fans, you know, they spent money to go down there. And we want to make sure that our fans and everybody sees the best team that we have to put out there. So we don't feel it's right to suspend the guys for the Sugar Bowl. No, we'll suspend them next year for week one. I mean, the logic, and by the way, that's not even SEC country. That's Big Ten country. But Ohio State might as well be the SEC. I mean,
well, everything you just said is the exact reason why you should have been right there with me, yeah, holding my hand regarding the Saban coaching. Like, why did you doubt that?
I don't know. Because I just, in my head, I'm like, there's just certain things that you're not going to be able to get through. You know, like COVID, but you're right. It's the SEC, and I should have known better.
Now, the Colts.
I apologize.
So we had two more NFL flare-ups today.
Yeah.
Actually, three more.
Yeah, it was the Pats, the Colts.
So the Patriots had another pause.
Yeah.
This is so fascinating. Like, I don't really understand any of the protocol. It just continues to change. So the Patriots had another positive on a Friday.
Mm-hmm. So they canceled practice, and everyone
but they're
going to
play.
Yes.
Why?
Because they already moved this game against Denver from last week.
So they're going to play because, well, we don't want to move it again.
Yes.
We don't have any options.
That's it?
That's what my assumption is.
Well, and
because when Cam Newton, well, no, I guess he tested positive on a Thursday.
And he didn't play.
They didn't play.
Yeah.
But they were trying to move the game, right? Wasn't that moved to like Monday? And then they moved it. They kept testing positive. So.
Yes.
So I don't know what the protocol is there, but somebody else tested positive for the Patriots, but apparently they just hit him over the head with a frying pan, throw him in a closet, and we'll go ahead and play on Sunday.
The NFL is doing the you have to get the second positive test.
What do you mean?
So this
guy has to test positive again?
Yeah, so they've sent him home. They sent everyone home.
Do we know who it is?
I have not seen
it
that.
It was a
yet.
Reserve offensive lineman.
Okay.
I don't know his name, but I saw that on
Big Soup.
The tweets.
That's you.
Hey, look at me. So Pro Football Talk had it where they said that if that test comes back confirmed positive, mm-hmm. he said there will likely be discussion about moving the game against the Broncos from Sunday.
Okay.
Moving it either to Monday or Tuesday would prove to be difficult, as both teams already had their bye week, and that leaves the league without a chance to do any kind of scheduling gymnastics that allowed them to move it to this weekend. So we don't know. Said word on the second test could come at some point on Friday after another round of testing. So we've
reached the stage where they're just going to lie to us about the results of these tests.
It's getting harder and harder.
They're going to say, look, so it was a false positive. But well, he's not playing. He's in quarantine. Just in case, everybody else is fine.
Well, and to give the NFL credit, if you want to do this as opposed to college, I mean, a couple guys can shut down a facility and can shut down games. College football, we just are kind of
Why do you think college football is getting such a pass and not being held to the same standard?
Well, my guess is because there's no Players Association and you're not dealing with $100 million athletes that can, you know, have some teeth and can fight back on this. Remember, all that stuff in the NFL has to be collectively bargained.
I'm not saying the players. I'm saying, like, just in the world, like in fans and media. Like, no one seems to care that there's all this COVID in college. Everybody's like,
no,
they're college kids. You know, whatever. Is it because there's just no leadership? It's just everybody's kind of fending for themselves and doing the best they can. Is it because they're not in a bubble? I mean, NFL isn't in a bubble.
No. I think there's just an expectation that college football is going to have them. And we knew that it was going to have them. We knew it was going to be bad. And we just expect it to be chaotic because there is no leadership. There is no uniform body. And by the way, for anyone that's pearl clutching right now over the SEC and, oh my God, I can't believe what they're doing. Where was this at the start of the year when the Sun Belt and the Big 12 and all this was going through it? It's like, it's funny that now that the SEC is canceling games and the SEC is having coaches test positive, now we're like, what's happening here? We've already had 20 plus games. I mean, Houston had what? Five games? Houston had five separate opponents that got canceled before they ever actually played a game. No one cared because it was Houston. But now that it's the SEC, now we're waking up and it's like, oh my gosh, but this is just the reality of college football. Yeah. And in some ways, it's the reality of the NFL. It's just the NFL is taking it way more seriously. Honestly, if college football was operating under the same guidelines, principles of the NFL, there wouldn't be a college football season. I mean, there hasn't been anything remotely close in the NFL to what a dozen teams in college football have had. Right. I mean, the big outbreaks in the NFL so far have been a handful. We haven't seen it with Baylor with 42 and LSU's entire team has it. I mean, that would shut down the NFL season. So it's interesting that we thought all along that college football would be the hardest one to get off the ground. But in reality, college football may be the one that plows through this thing more than anything else just because there's no one to stop it.
That's true.
Right? There's no commissioner. There's no voice saying,
everybody's
hey,
just
you,
doing
you
the
can't
best.
Do this.
Everybody's just doing their own thing.
Yes.
And that's why the Pac-12 and the Big Ten seem to have done it a little bit better, but we'll wait and see how that works out. And the Patriots did play after Cam tested positive. That's right. That was that Kansas City game.
Yeah, they played.
That's right. And then they kept testing positive, and so then they had to move the Denver game. So Patriots could play on Sunday. And then the Colts.
But they may not play on Sunday. They may play on Monday or they may not play.
The Colts had three positives or four positives, but then they said they were all false.
False positives.
So they're fine.
Yeah. So the game against the Bengals is on.
And then the Falcons had a coach test positive and they just put him down.
They took him out back. I don't think that's the way that works.
No, they had a coach test positive, but the next day they reopened their facility. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how they're able to do that, but
look, at the end of the day, all we can do is just tune in every morning and see exactly what's going on and what's going to get moved, what's going to get canceled.
Look, as a fan, all I want to do is have these games. Like I got Minnesota is one of my big plays this week.
Yeah.
I can't have the Falcons with COVID.
Well, and right now
let's play.
We're getting to the point as this thing goes on where there just isn't going to be nearly the wiggle room in the NFL. Now they can
do the extra week.
They canceled the Pro Bowl. You can move an extra week. You know, they have the ability to do that, but I guess that is the very last thing. But my point is you're getting to the point like where they're saying with the Patriots game here, because the bye weeks have already kind of come and gone here, the gymnastics of moving games like they were able to do early in the year, those are running out. You're going to have to start adding weeks or just canceling games.
I read two things. Okay, so the Super Bowl is in Tampa this year.
Tampon Bay, yes.
And I read that the NFL basically blocks that whatever venue the Super Bowl is in.
Yeah, for like a month.
They get it for a month. So they can actually, it's not, so they've already canceled the Pro Bowl. So they have that week in between the end of the playoffs and the Super Bowl that they can add a week to the season. Yeah. They can just push everything. And so then there would only be 1 week between the end of the championship games and the Super Bowl, which we've had before. That's fine. They can do that. So there's that, but they could also then, if they really needed to, move the Super Bowl as far back as 3 more weeks. Yeah. So they have plenty of room to move games.
Those are just the nuclear options.
They just don't want to. It's set for February 7th, and that's when they want to play it. But logistically, they have wiggle room because the NFL, God, can you imagine how much money they need to have to just set aside a venue like that for a month?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll just...
They do make what?
Play a couple pickup games.
What's the NFL revenue? 20 bill?
Oh, probably. Anyway, there is today in COVID, the curious case of Clayton Kershaw next. Here's Mike.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, the Rays and Astros are playing again.
That tends to happen.
Well, it feels like a best of 13.
Yeah, they've only played 5.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it just feels like with these daily games, it's like, again, game 12.
It is weird that there is no break.
But Blake Snell's pitching for Tampon.
This is a big one for Snell. Like, I think there's a lot of pressure on him because we were talking about this yesterday with the who was the only team, Mike, to blow a 3-0 lead?
Yankees.
And what happened there in game 7, right? That kind of...
They blew it.
They blew it, and you know.
Well, they blew it.
You know. So I think if
they blew him.
If you're Tampa, right? I mean, you can't let this thing go to Game 7. So, you know, you got Snell on there, and
he's already at like 38 pitches through 1 2/3, which is not ideal.
No, well, two of them, he's buzzing some towers.
Yeah,
which is great. He buzzed, I think Altuve, and then he buzzed Kyle Tucker.
No, he buzzed Correa.
Was it Correa?
Yeah.
You know, there's just pressure. You got to find a way to end this. You can't let Houston, a team that's good, that good, and already their confidence is starting to swell, and they got the stupid chip on their shoulder because they're cheating bastards and everyone hates them, so they can use that as motivation. You just can't let this go to Game 7.
You should probably stop walking everybody. That'd be good.
Did he walk another one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's back-to-back walks now there.
Great.
That's his third of the game, fourth of the game?
So I saw that the Rays have used 15 pitchers in these 5 games.
Yes.
15.
And you've heard of like 3 of them.
Astros have used 12. I saw somebody that I follow on Twitter that is a Royals guy tweet this. Do you know how many pitchers the Royals threw in the span of 7 games? Because the 1985 World Series went 7 games against the Cardinals. That was the Don Dinkinger call. How many pitchers the Royals through in that series, all 7 games total?
All 7 games. So I'm assuming you had 4 starters, and let's go with, I'll go 9.
6.
What? 6?
6.
6?
How is that even possible?
Because they had 4 starters, and so I'm...
2 relievers.
What?
Well, they only had... No, sorry. They had 3 starters.
I was going to say, you got to have 3 starters relievers that go twice apiece. Well, one went 3.
And each... I'm going to pull it up here just to give you the names. Each starter started 2 games in the series. Mm-hmm. So there's 6 of the games, and they all went 8 innings or more every time. So
Clayton Kershaw hasn't seen 8 innings in like a decade. Like after 5, that thing he just falls off a cliff. He's got Pedro Martinez syndrome.
So Brett Saberhagen, Charlie Liebrandt, and Danny Jackson all had at least 16 innings in the series.
Yeah. Did one of them throw, who started game 7?
Brett Saberhagen started game 7, but Bud Black was the other starter.
Yeah.
And he pitched, so there's your fourth guy.
Okay.
And then they only had 2 relievers come in because everybody went into the 8th. So it was Dan Quisenberry, and then I forget the other guy who came in, but.
That's insane.
It's crazy.
Oh, how times have changed.
Well, that's what we were talking about yesterday with Moneyball. That article I read, and I don't remember it. like I said, I think it was The Athletic, but I'm not certain, on the anniversary of Moneyball, where they said one of the big things that came from Moneyball was the analytics of the number of times through the lineup, and you know, batting average and what, like run totals. We all know now that the more times you go through a lineup, the worse off you are. And especially that third time through the lineup. And so, you know, guys now, even when guys are pitching well, you see guys get pulled after the fifth inning, right? When you get to that third time around, it's statistically proven now that you're better off going to a bullpen guy and having that be the first time that you've seen him, as opposed to even a dominant starter. Now, that's not always the case. We know there's true aces out there that can go deep, but you know, how many times have you seen regular season or postseason now, you get a guy that seems to be cruising, and after six innings, especially if you know, in the NL and you need to make a play to try to get a run across the board, you know, he gets yanked and then you go to a bullpen. I mean, shoot, we've seen in this postseason, we've seen guys yanked. What they pulled Greinke, that Astros, in that first series, they pulled Greinke after like 38 pitches.
So the pitchers in the 1985 World Series for the Royals, the starting pitchers pitched 55 and a third innings. Mm-hmm. The relievers pitched six and two thirds.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Times have certainly changed.
All of this to bring up Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah. And do you honestly, I feel bad. I like Clayton Kershaw. Seems like a good dude. You know, he's a great Dodger. One of the best to do it in the regular season. But his legacy is written. I mean, there's no way around it.
How old is he?
Oh, I think he's been pitching for 13, 14 years. So, I mean, he's got to be in his mid-30s.
I mean, he's still got more opportunity. Yeah, he's 32.
32.
He's got a couple more years.
But at this point, right, if you're the Dodgers, and it's a must-win game, and last night certainly was a must-win game. And I know
Dave Roberts loves him.
And I know he was pitching well, but when you get to that third time through the lineup, You got to pull him. Now, I know that the bullpen didn't do him any favors when they came in either, but I mean,
dude, it's really weird.
I mean, my goodness.
Okay, let's talk about this coming up next. And it is weird what's gone on with Kershaw, because he's the least effective great pitcher in the playoffs ever.
Yes.
And he is great. Look at his numbers.
And to be fair, he has had some moments in the postseason that have been pretty good.
That's what makes him so weird, is that he has had great postseason moments. We'll talk about it next. It is 3:47 on The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, we're talking about Clayton Kershaw, and I find him to be one of the more fascinating creatures in all of sports, because he is Hall of Fame level good in the regular season.
Yep.
But in the postseason, he just cannot get over the hump in terms of particularly bigger spots later in the playoffs. Now, Clayton Kershaw, so just to give you an idea, in the regular season is 175-76.
Mm-hmm. That's a, 6.97 win percentage.
And his regular season ERA is 2.4.
He's but only had one year where it's above four, and that was his rookie year.
2.4.
Yep.
But in the postseason, his ERA is 4.3, almost double, and he is 11-12. And he has had good performances, but generally failures. And as Joe Posnanski pointed out today, it's fascinating to look at. He is actually worse the later you get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I can read you those numbers if you like. Wild card games, he's 1-0 with a zero ERA. National League Division Series, he's 6-4 with a 4 ERA. In the CS, he's 3-6 with a 4.84 ERA. And in the World Series, he's 1-2 with a 5.4 ERA. Fascinating.
He just hasn't.
Absolutely fascinating, because you could say it's a small sample size, and that would be fair, because I mean, let me look at how many innings total he's pitched
in the postseason.
Yeah, because he's pitched a lot.
Yeah,
but still, in baseball terms, it's
176.
Right. So if you're going through a season, and you know, I guess 176 innings over the course of a like if that happened during a season and he goes 11-12 with a 4.3 ERA, there's probably a little cause for concern.
Sure.
Right. Well, that's a little longer than just a bad stretch.
I mean, this is what I think his 11th postseason. I mean, he's.
I know he's pitched a lot, but at the same time, in baseball terms, it's 176 innings really isn't a huge sample size, even though it's bigger than most guys ever in the playoffs, right? Yeah. I mean, that's not, in other words, you could just say that, look, he just hasn't been good in the playoffs, but it doesn't mean he won't be good in the playoffs moving forward. Or maybe he just had bad luck, or maybe they left him in too long. You know, that's another theory.
Well, and he is, and there's times where he has gone out on short rest, right? And he's wanted the ball. He's come in relief situations in big postseason moments. He has not shied away from this. Give him credit for that. But at this point, you know, with the back issues that he's had now over the last several seasons, and he's 32, next year will be 33 years old. I just think the idea that this defining moment of Clayton Kershaw's career is coming in the postseason, he's just not the horse anymore. And last night, you know, again, he was pitching fine. You get to the third time through, and he just isn't the same guy anymore.
Well, and that again goes to Dave Roberts thing of like, just yank him, man.
Yes.
He gave you six.
This is the Pedro Martinez.
Right, five?
Yeah, he went five.
Went five. Gave you five.
This is the Pedro Martinez. Are you okay? And leaving him in one inning too many. Against, by the way, the Yankees. And that was the Yankees are my daddies.
It's probably a combination of all of those things. I mean, the guy's greatness. But can you name any other athlete like this? Like,
well, up until, pitcher. I was going to say up until the last World Series and they ended up losing, but he had a monster series. Bonds was really bad in the postseason. Bonds had not played very well at all.
Yeah. A lot of people are bringing up Greg Maddux.
I'd have to see. I don't.
He did not have great postseason numbers, but Poznanski talked about him too and said that he gave up like 25 unearned runs in the postseason. He just had a bad defense behind him. But
look here and see
that doesn't explain everything.
And see what his postseason numbers. But I'm guessing you could go through with Glavin or any of those guys, because as good as those Brave teams were, and then this is going to be like Kershaw, they were in the postseason. I'm looking here. Maddux was in the postseason basically from 95 all the way to 2003. I mean,
2008. He pitched, actually.
Yeah, but there was a gap. I mean, weren't there. And I'm saying from 1995 to 2003, he was in the postseason every year.
Yep.
And that's like Glavin and those guys. And the only one the one World Series. So I'm guessing if you looked at Glavin or Avery or any of those guys, Smoltz, the numbers in the postseason probably aren't going to be outstanding, because you know they lost a lot of those games.
Maddux was 11-14, which isn't great, but his ERA was 3.27, and like I said, he gave up 25 unearned runs.
I'm looking.
So that's pretty good. Here's a guy. Did you know Zach Greinke's been about as bad as Clayton Kershaw in the postseason?
I didn't.
So Greinke regular season 2.08-126, 3.37 ERA. Postseason 4-6, 4.2 ERA.
Well, then let me ask you this. Is there something to just the moment? Because you look at guys like Curt Schilling, you look at guys like Bumgarner, Bumgarner was really good, and Curt Schilling was too, but neither one of those guys was Clayton Kershaw regular season. They weren't Greg Maddux, but there was something about in the postseason, those guys were just, they were assassins.
It's the question you ask is one of the better, more interesting questions in sports. What does Madison Bumgarner have that Clayton Kershaw doesn't? Is it anything?
It's got to be something.
Does it? Or again, has Clayton Kershaw just, I mean, he's been good, not great. He just, I don't know. It's like, it's a great question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. I know that Bob Feller was greatness.
Yeah.
3.25 regular season ERA. He was 0-2 with a 5 ERA in the postseason, but he only had two starts.
He had two starts. By the way, you know, because I was looking through the Braves.
Glavin?
No. Go one more.
Oh, what's his nuts?
Smoltz. Smoltz.
Postseason?
Smoltz was lights out.
15, oh, was he?
15-4, 2.67.
Damn.
Over 14 years and 25 series.
God.
Guy was a hammer.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there is something to the mental side. I don't know. It's a fascinating question. I would love to know the answer.
Right. I mean, I was looking through, and you look at Maddux and Glavin's are okay. They're kind of like Maddux's. They're not really bad. But then you look at Smoltz and you're like, oh, well, there's something different. And I, you know, was, and they're all Hall of Famers, right? So who was, you know, who was the better pitcher? Greg Maddux had a better career than Glavin or Smoltz, but I'll tell you right now that if you had to ask the question in a big game, who do you want to have the ball? It ain't Tom Glavin, and it sure as shoot isn't Greg Maddux. It's John Smoltz.
Yeah, and if you have a playoff game, you want Bumgarner times a million over Kershaw.
Right? I mean, there's just...
But Kershaw was a better pitcher.
So I do think there is... Exactly, but there is something...
There's got to be something.
There's got to be something
I guess there does.
And I don't know what that is other than... You know, we can debate this in every sport. You know, it's the what you clutch or your rise to the moment or however you want to define that. Some guys just do it. And I don't think you can, I don't think there's any way to quantify that.
The other guys in sports that Poznanski brought up, good performances, but generally failures. John Elway, before he won.
Yeah.
With Terrell Davis. Because Elway had a bad rep.
He did. And I always think that that's a little wonky because in football, a lot of the times it's just your team. If you look at some of those Denver teams, you're just so woefully overmatched. And we had Carl Mecklenburg on, and the one year that the Redskins, remember they just obliterated the Broncos, whatever. I mean, they just annihilated them. And Mecklenburg talks about how one of the, and I forget the guy's name, but we went and looked at the film and you can find who it is. There was one safety, he said, that was all drugged up and hung over and boozed up, and he got torched for like four of those touchdowns. Like, that's not on Elway. Football is a weird sport because so much goes into the quarterback. We always say the quarterback gets too much blame and he gets too much credit. But when you're on the mound, and I grant there's defense and run support and all that, but when you're on the mound in those big moments, that's Clayton Kershaw. There's no one there to blame other than Clayton giving up long balls.
And Elway, I mean, my God, he was 14-7 in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But 7-0 in those last two runs.
Sure. And then, you know,
right at the end,
you know, the Super Bowls were failures. That's like Jim Kelly. I bet you Jim Kelly's playoff numbers are ridiculous. If we looked up Kelly's numbers in the postseason, I bet they're great.
Hmm.
But does anyone remember Jim Kelly for anything other than what? He lost four Super Bowls.
Yeah.
But and I know we got to go to break, but I'll have him when we come back. I'll look him up and I'll bet you his postseason numbers are fantastic because they got to four straight Super Bowls and were in a bunch of playoffs, and those were great offensive teams.
Yeah, I've got it here. 9-8 was his record.
Okay.
Postseason. 21. Oh, boy. No, they're not good, dude.
No?
No. 21 TDs, 28 picks.
Ah.
59% completion.
Interesting.
Yeah, he did not have.
Boy, I would have bet the house that Jim Kelly was going to have good numbers.
That was all Thurman Thomas and some D.
I guess.
And some Marv Levy.
Surprising.
And not really Scott Norwood.
Just if that one kick.
Jerry West is another one that Poznanski brought up. That's two before my time. I don't have the context.
They lost a lot.
He lost a ton until the end.
Wilt, who is viewed as the most dominant player by a lot of people, Wilt was owned in the NBA Finals. He was owned by Russell.
Well, I don't give two rips about the Dodgers, but I will tell you that I will be pulling for Clayton Kershaw for the rest of his career in the postseason.
I'd like to see him get one. This year, though, it pisses me off because I bet on the Dodgers before this whole thing to win the World Series, and now.
Well, it's not over yet. No. But.
It's been done, I think, 14 times coming back from 3-1.
All right. It's been done. Dodgers have the firepower. By the way, the Rays lead the Astros 1-0 in the third. All right. The Browns could only have one quarterback this weekend. We'll tell you about that next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.